Welcome back in everyone to a fabulous new Whisper in the Wings from Stage Whisper. We are joined by a fantastic show today, and joining us to talk to us about this wonderful show, we have the incredible writer and lead actress, Joanna Castle Miller. She's joining us to talk about her upcoming work, Inferna, which is playing June 2nd at 3 p.m. and June 3rd at 7 p.m. at The Tank. And you can get your tickets and more information by visiting thetanknyc.org. We love bringing all of you productions that play at The Tank. It's a wonderful venue, a great sandbox here in New York. And we're especially excited about this performance as it came highly recommended by our friend of the show, Ali Keller. So with all of that, let's go ahead and welcome on our guest, Joanna. Welcome to Whisper in the Wings from Stage Whisper.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
I'm so excited you're here. I wish our listeners could see how fabulous you look today. You are the epitome of a Friday afternoon, and I'm living for it.
Oh, thank you.
A great show, Inferna. To share with our listeners and our audience. So why don't we start by having you tell us a bit about what Inferna is about?
Yeah, thanks so much. So Inferna is an autobiographical comedy, hold that word, about growing up fundamentalist evangelical and as a theater kid at the same time, and how both of those cultures worked together to create systems of abuse that I ultimately became complicit in. But like I said, it's a comedy. It's sort of a cross between What the Constitution Means to Me and the movie Saved, if you're familiar with that. But basically, we look really intensely at hell anxiety and the theater canon and the way that theater and religion have both failed us in terms of how they teach power and consent.
I love that. That is a fantastic story to be telling. So I would love to kind of build on that and find out, you know, what inspired you to write this story?
Well, so first I lived it and didn't intend to write about it ever. And honestly lived it as a child, so I didn't really know what I had lived. But then I had a little bit of time to process it. And when I really began to process it, and I realized it is, I haven't exactly expressed, but I don't want to spoil the show, but this thing that happened to me was around the Christine Blasey Ford testimony. And it made me rethink believability and the idea of the perfect and imperfect victim. And she's actually the first person that I told this story to. I wrote her a letter the night before she testified, and just telling someone helped me to imagine writing it as a play for the first time, which was helpful just to get it out. And then she ended up actually getting back to me and was apparently moved by the story, and that added even more fuel. And I thought, oh, maybe there really is something here. So a couple of years later, I was a fellow with New York Stage and Film, and I began to talk with them about a potential residency. And the artistic director there at the time, Chris Burney, encouraged me to write something that I would otherwise never write without institutional support, is how they put it. And this show was so obviously the answer to that question, because frankly, it's a really tough look at the theater canon and especially the Golden Age musicals, but also some straight plays by really beloved playwrights. And I really only wanted to do that from within the theater community. I wanted other smart people's perspective. I wanted to know whether I was onto something, how people that really know this stuff alongside me would react. So that's how it kind of came into being.
That is quite the journey. I love that. I love that you started off with, well, first I lived it. You know, that's the end. We're working backwards in this. We didn't just think of the story and then put it on the stage. It was literally like, I lived it. I had to jot down some notes and then re-present it. No, but I love that. Now I want to ask, is this the world premiere of your piece?
This production is just, it's a workshop production. Yep, it's not a premiere.
So with this being a workshop, what has it been like developing the piece so far? And especially as we get ready to see what you've got together in June.
I mean, it's truly been a delight. Like making this show has been a delight. And part of it is because I've worked with some really great teams in developing it. Like I mentioned New York Stage and Film, they were amazing. And I was able to take it to the Valdez Theater Conference And I've gotten notes from a number of theaters since then. And generally the feedback has always started with people wanting to share their own stories, which to me is like both a sign of success and also just kind of why we do this is to kind of get conversations started. So the conversation that's been around the development of it has been really, really exciting. And I think just personally in developing it, there's been something so powerful about taking a traumatic event and turning it into comedy. And that the way that kind of requires that you revisit it from a bunch of different angles and you reshape the way that people said things, or you show them in a new context or think about them in a new way with some distance from it. That's a very cathartic thing. And it's been really nice to find the places where it's universal too. I mean, the very specific parts are fun. And it's really nice to know when people are like weirded out by something that I've always thought was super normal, but it's also really fun when those like things that I always thought were super weird, it turns out like every kid that went to church all thought the same thing. And we're like, I thought I was the only one. That's really fun. So that part's been really great. You know, I talk about this directly in the play. One of the big differences between theater and film and TV is the playwright's control over the script. And sometimes historically, the people that have kind of protected that right have been really problematic men who protected that right so that they could essentially keep marginalized people out of their shows forever if they could. But what's interesting is coming into it from a you know, more or less marginalized community, talking about marginalized communities and being, and all of us that do this work from that perspective, it makes theater this really unique place to work out our demons, because no one can change what we have to say. And because the play deals directly with that, thinking about that while we've been in development has been fascinating, because I get to kind of serve like a god, which was always the idea that these problematic men had, was to serve as gods over their work. And so thinking about God and these problematic men from our history, and then also stepping into that kind of a role as the playwright all at once has led to some really interesting conversations and breakthroughs.
That is absolutely fantastic. I love that. I want to build on those thoughts, and I want to ask, you know, is there a message or a thought you're hoping people will take away from Inferno?
Yeah, you know, we're having so many conversations right now about consent and believability. And as I mentioned, the idea of a perfect victim versus an imperfect victim, it's really in the ether right now. It's in the documentaries that are coming out and obviously entire movements. And for a lot of us, including myself, I think those conversations have forced us to rethink a lot of our interactions and see when our boundaries have been crossed and things that we might not have even realized happened to us, or even things that we might not have realized we did. But where I think we might mess up is if we leave it there, because it's really easy for an audience to say, oh my God, I'm so sorry this happened to you. And to not look at the systems that are underneath it that allowed it to happen. And as I say in the play, as artists, we are steeped in a culture of abuse. It's literally written into the canon, even into the really lighthearted shows, most of the shows that are given to children to perform. And as a result, we've learned more or less to be complicit because we don't know anything different. That's very, very true for my character in Inferna. And so I want audiences to leave with a better sense of how deeply these narratives go in our psyches, and maybe be more willing to deconstruct that a little, so that we're all, because the thing is, we can't change those plays. And honestly, maybe we don't want to. They're classics. They're wonderful. I love them. I love these plays that I'm criticizing, you know, but we have the chance now to absorb different stories and to tell different stories and to think about the stories that we're putting into the world in the future in a new way.
Yes, yes, yes to all of that. That is brilliant. Well, my final question for this first part is, who do you hope have access to Inferna?
Inferna is a show for theater people. It's especially playwrights, but really anyone in theater. It's a show for recovering church kids. It's a show for anyone that grew up feeling scared of claiming power themselves or speaking outside of the scripts that they've been given, whatever those are. It's interesting. Our team is made up of people from all different faiths, and it doesn't really matter because these ideas are so much a part of our culture and they permeate everything so deeply that it's become a common language. The ideas around punishment and sin and shame and heaven and hell are like in us, even if we don't believe in them. And then I also personally would love for anyone working with children to see the show, because it's partly told from a child's point of view, and it deals a lot with the way that children are processing adult stories, especially when they're given those stories to perform and they're introduced as really fun, lighthearted musicals and plays. They become sort of a part of your psyche as a child in a different way than they do as an adult. And the lines will stick with you for longer, and they have memories associated with them that we don't give to plays when we're older. So it's interesting to think about and think kind of critically about, and maybe allow it to shape the way that we educate children too.
Well, on the second part of our interview, we love giving our listeners a chance to get to know our guests a little bit more. Pull the curtain back, if you will. And if the show you're doing already isn't personal enough, I want to ask you, you know, what or who inspires you? What playwrights, composers, or shows have inspired you in the past, or are just some of your favorites?
Yeah, I love that question. You know, ironically, while I criticize the canon and all the way through Inferna, I love Golden Age musicals. I love them. I talk in the play about seeing Camelot as a child with the Robert Goulet coming back as Arthur. And, you know, my mom was so excited, and it was such a lively thing. And I was hooked. I was hooked to theater from there. It was just this glorious experience. And so I have to start there, because I mentioned in the play that, you know, this is a classic. It's still one of my favorites, but I can't reiterate that enough. But I love most work, honestly, most work by women playwrights who have something worth saying. That's kind of where I've been living lately. I love Paula Vogel, Lynn Nottage, Sarah Rule. A number of people have compared Inferna to Heidi Schreck's What the Constitution Means to Me, including myself, and I will happily accept that. Although it existed before I'd seen that play, there's a language that women are speaking right now, a reclaiming of stories that is really exciting, and a kind of revisioning of history that I love. And, you know, maybe it's kind of self-serving, but I have experience doing stand-up. I did stand-up for a while, and I've been really enjoying a sort of blurring of the lines between stand-up and theater when that can happen well. Because I think if you have something super specific to say, the jokes can be an incredibly powerful tool for disarming people and helping start conversations that we otherwise wouldn't want to have. And especially at a time where people are a little bit more hesitant to go to theater, where the kind of the cultural shift has become watching streaming at home. There's something really, really nice about being able to say, hey, this is a comedy. You will laugh. You're going to enjoy yourself even as we have this bigger conversation. So I think of like Alex Edelman's Just for Us is an obvious recent example of it. But I probably started thinking about that as something I really wanted to do more of after Hannah Gadsby's The Net came out, which isn't straight theater, but that's kind of the point. It's like, no, that's stand-up, but it's also, gosh, it feels like theater. What are we doing here? That kind of feeling of like, how'd I end up in this room, and where's it going, and why is there only one person on stage with a stool, but I'm still as entertained as I would be at like a mega production. I really love when artists can take us there.
That is a fantastic list. I love pretty much all the artists that you just listed. That is amazing. Well, let me ask you, what is your favorite part about working in the theater?
There's so many things. I think, you know, I mentioned, or I don't know if everything that I say will air, but I mentioned earlier the power of having control over your own work and the freedom that gives. That's a really exciting thing. But now that we're back in the room with this play, I think the camaraderie is what stands out the most. Like even in getting feedback on my scripts, most of the time, even the most powerful people that have talked to me about it just really want to see a great play. So there's a lot of curiosity and a lot of questions, and there's a different vibe than like getting feedback on a film or a screenplay. So I love bringing that into a room together, having this sort of back and forth, the interest that everyone has in diving deep into the work that I get in theater and that I haven't gotten anywhere else. You know, yesterday in the rehearsal room, the other actor in our show who is Tom Degnan, who's excellent, and he's literally currently filming Blue Bloods as we speak. He tried out a few different ways to deliver this one line, and we were just getting to sit there and discover the funniest one. And it was live laughter that decided, you know, and being able to spend hours doing that, just digging into a script and finding the laugh and then getting it from your own friends before you get to share that with the audience. That part of it's a blast, but then you do get to experience it with the audience. And there's this feeling of like, I cannot wait to show you this part. Like, I can't wait till you see this part that heightens the stakes. And it just all feels really exciting.
I love that answer. That is a brilliant, brilliant answer. Thank you for that. And it leads to my favorite question to ask guests, which is, what is your favorite theater memory?
Okay. I'm so excited. So I went to see a show at the DC or Capitol Fringe in Washington, DC about 10 years ago by the team at Faction of Fools, which they specialize in commedia dell'arte. They're lovely. They're wonderful. And it was good. It was as usual from them. It was very funny, very silly. I was already a fan, and they had an ASL translator there, which is also something that's very normal for them. They've always prioritized that. And at the end of the play, like with many comedias, there was a wedding, and the cast suddenly turns to the audience and they pick a couple of people to come on stage and get married. And slowly I start to realize that these are not just random people, and that this is a real bride and groom, and that we're about to have a real wedding, and the cast is going to officiate it. And the couple, as it turns out, were deaf, as were many of their friends and family in the audience. So that is one of the many reasons they always usually had ASL interpreters, but it was one of the many reasons they had one there that day. And so this couple got married in front of us, and then the cast passed out little cakes to everyone, and their family and friends are in the audience like cheering for that. It was one of the most joyful things I've ever seen in a theater. It was a reminder of everything that makes theater so special. I was the sense of surprise and community that could never happen through streaming and that you'll never get unless you're in the room. And I honestly felt like I was maybe one of 20 people that just happened upon it. It was magic. It was magic.
That is such a fantastic memory. Oh my gosh. I love that. Now I see why you were so excited when I asked the question. It was wonderful. I was like, this is going to be a good one. You did not disappoint. That is wonderful. Thank you so much for sharing that.
Thanks.
As we wrap things up, I would love to know, do you have any other projects or productions coming down the pipeline we might be able to plug for you?
Yeah, well, so here's what's interesting. Inferna is actually the first of three plays that all dissect aspects of fundamentalist Christianity and how it permeates culture and impacted my life. And the second play is finished, and it's a one-woman show called Conversa. And this one deals with evangelical missionaries and migration and conversion. And it's all centered around my mother's conversion when she was hoping to be a rabbi. She converted through Jews for Jesus to be an evangelical. And my own return to Judaism from a progressive lens. So Conversa is right now a special finalist with the Jewish Plays Project. And we just finished its developmental lab in April. So I'm in the process of putting that show together, potentially as a presentation at some theaters, and then also potentially as a production.
That is so exciting. I love how many irons you have in the fire. So that's a great lead into my final question, which of course is, if our listeners would like more information about Inferna or about you, maybe they'd like to reach out to you, how can they do so?
Yeah, it's easy enough. You can just go to thetanknyc.org, and we're in the calendar on June 2nd and 3rd. Or you can visit my website, joannacastlemiller.com. And then we are also taking this workshop production to Alaska later in June to the Valdez Theater Conference. So if you happen to be in Alaska, we will see you there.
Field trip, let's go. We're doing this. Well, that is also wonderful. Thank you so much for taking the time today to speak with me, for sharing this fantastic show. I can't wait to see it, and I can't wait to see the future productions of it. This is so exciting, and all the works you've got, this is incredible. I'm so glad we got to speak with you and get on the ground floor before you blow up, and we can say we knew you when. So thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks so much, Andrew. I really appreciate it. Thanks for bringing so much joy to what we're doing.
Oh, thank you. My guest today has been the amazing writer and lead actress, Joanna Castle Miller, whose upcoming show, Inferna, is happening at The Tank on June 2nd at 3 p.m. and June 3rd at 7 p.m. You can get your tickets and more information by visiting thetanknyc.org. And we also have some contact information for Joanna that we'll be posting on our episode description as well as on our social media posts. But everyone, head over right now to thetanknyc.org. Get your tickets now. Join us to see this incredible workshop of this fabulous story. We can't wait to see it. We can't wait to laugh along with Joanna. The show again is Inferna, happening June 2nd and June 3rd. So until next time, I'm Andrew Cortez, reminding you to turn off your cell phones, unwrap your candies, and keep talking about the theater.
In a stage whisper.
Thank you.
If you like what you hear, please leave a 5-star review, like, and subscribe.
You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram at Stage Whisper Pod.
And feel free to reach out to us with your comments and personal stories at stagewhisperpod@gmail.com.
And be sure to check out our website for all things Stage Whisper and theater. You'll be able to find merchandise, tours, tickets, and more. Simply visit stagewhisperpod.com. Our theme song is Maniac by Jazzar. Other music on this episode provided by Jazzar and Billy Murray. You can also become a patron of our show by logging on to patreon.com/stagewhisperpod. There you will find all the information about our backstage pass as well as our tip jar. Thank you so much for your generosity. We could not do this show without you.